Two. Recorded live.
It's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. You can run and tell your friends that I'm on, I'm on, I'm on, I'm on, I'm on, I'm on, I'm on. Best believe I understand. It's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. You can run and tell my city I'm on, I'm on, I'm on, I'm on.
Yeah, good evening and welcome to another episode of the Virtual Talk Show produced by the Head of Household. We come your way every Tuesday night from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can get more info about this show by visiting our website, householdstress.com. Listeners can participate in one of our live weekly talk shows by calling in or logging on to householdstress.com from your personal computer as an anonymous guest. Phone lines are open right now, but this show is strictly for men only. So call in to the hottest talk show in America. Now, we have a couple rules, and they are, excuse me, absolutely no profanity and no politics. And more importantly, fellas, no racial stuff. This show is apolitical and race neutral so that we can make sure that any man can feel comfortable on our show. And furthermore, this ain't Bible study, fellas. We want you to just be able to come to our show as a man, and that is it. The Virtual Talk Show always presents the hottest topics for discussion, and tonight is no different. Tonight's topic is Keeping Up with the Joneses. My name is Rodney, and I'll be your pilot for the evening. I've got a lot of material, and the hope is that I can get this plane off the ground and ultimately land on a safe conclusion. This is a fluid conversation, so if you do have something to say, please feel free to do so, or if you just prefer to listen, that's absolutely fine as well. Oh, and what is this? Oh, yeah, that's the seatbelt sound when you're on an airplane. Yes, I brought it back. When you hear that sound, it means to take your seat and buckle your seatbelts because it's about to get a little bumpy. That sound is just to put you on notice that it might get a little uncomfortable. And, fellas, I'm predicting that there's going to be a whole lot of turbulence tonight. But please try to hang on until the end because you'll definitely want to hear the conclusion to this episode. All right. With all of that said, let's get started. First question, would you consider it keeping up with the Joneses? If you went out and bought a generator after a hurricane knocked out your power just because your neighbor had one. I know earlier we were talking about being without power.
No way. Listen, I'm going to tell you like this. I was at the store when I got a call and the man said, listen, I said, man, I don't have no power. I got to get some ice because I don't want my stuff to go dead in the freezer. He says, I got power, come get my generator. I came home, got his generator, put it on. Two neighbors across the street, like, where you get that generator? I got to go get the one because my whole basement flooded. Because the sump pump went out. And one went, and he found one for $800 and paid for it on the spot. He didn't care how much it cost.
$800?
He got the nice little huge one, $800. It was the one they had, and he picked it up. But I think that's one of those emergency-type things where, yeah, we don't need it. But, like, I tell my son, you know, I tell my wife, I buy things even if I don't need it because you never know when you're going to need it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not keeping up with the Joneses. It's just being prepared. Because the ones that end up going buying it is because they're not prepared.
Good words. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, I don't really think that's keeping up with the Joneses on that, on the generator piece. Because if you don't have it and you see somebody else that has it and they're using it, you know, I can understand going to buy it, even if your power's not out.
Gotcha. And that goes the same for, like, snowblowers. Because, you know, I mean, we don't really have heavy snows in this area. But, you know, my neighbor a couple doors down, you know, he does have a snowblower. And that year we had that 3 feet of snow. You know, I was envious. He just came out and just, he didn't even look down the street to see if anybody needed any help or anything. And he just cleaned his driveway off and went on back in the house. You know,
yeah,
so.
Now that's wrong.
You know, but I was like, man, I wish I had me a, you know, snowblower. But
make somebody want to break into his house in the summer and sabotage that snowblower. You see how you act this winter. You ain't gonna help them. I mean, look. The neighborly thing, man, you got to help folks out. I don't care if it takes all day. Even if you don't want to do it, say, hey, look, come on, get this snowblower and just put it back when you're done. Because I see you struggling. You're about to break your back with those shovels.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, you know, that's what
yeah.
it's about. It's not about, you know, just taking care of yourself.
Yeah. Good words. But what, in y'all's opinion, in your own words, what does this phrase keeping up with the Joneses even mean? What does it mean, keeping up with the Joneses?
To me, I think it's an identity thing. I think it's borderline like, you know, you may have identity issues. You don't really know who you are. You know what I mean? And you're picking these other people and saying, you know, that's who I want to be like. I want to do what they do. I want to have what they have. I want their life. You know,
yeah, you essentially. Go ahead.
Yeah, they got, you know, that black car. I need that black car. They done went and bought a bigger whatever lawnmower. Now I got to buy me a bigger lawnmower. Even at any cost, even if you go into debt, whatever the case may be, they just want to share their identity.
Yep, you're exactly right. I mean, keeping up with the Joneses is actually an idiom that refers to the comparison to one's neighbor as a benchmark for success or the accumulation of material goods, as the brother said. And to fail to keep up with the Joneses is perceived as demonstrating socioeconomic or cultural inferiority. But did y'all know that this phrase is primarily tied to the English-speaking world? Did y'all know that?
No, I didn't know that.
I thought it was straight up slang.
And why do y'all think that is? Why do y'all think it's primarily tied to the English-speaking world? Why do y'all think that is? Any guesses?
I don't know, man.
It's got something
know.
To do with the name Joneses?
No, just actually the not necessarily specifically the name Joneses, but you know, as I said, as I explained in the definition, like just comparing yourself to your neighbor as a benchmark for success. That whole idea is only, you know, is primarily tied in the English speaking, you know, parts of the world. Not necessarily just, you know, the Joneses piece, but just kind of keeping up with your neighbor as
yeah.
a benchmark.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And
I,
this, go ahead.
I get that. English.
And yeah. And this phrase has been with us for a long time, but any idea when y'all think this whole phenomenon started? The whole keeping up with the Joneses phenomenon?
Cain and Abel?
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's been with us a long time, but, you know, do y'all think that TV and the internet, you know, put more gasoline on this already raging fire when it comes to keeping up with the Joneses? Does TV and internet play a part in that?
All these reality shows might have bumped it up a little bit, yeah. I believe
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And how so, brother? How do you think the reality shows have played a part in that?
Because these reality shows are how rich people live. You know, the majority of these are, hey, live like the rich person, or they got these basketball wives where, you know, I'm married, I'm a groupie and I married a basketball player, so I can live, I can buy, you know, Louis Vuitton every day.
Right.
And this is how life is supposed to be.
And they literally, and you can almost look at, before the Real Housewives, you can look at Cribs. You know, when they took you into celebrities and athletes' homes, you know, and they did you, you know, a little virtual tour. But they actually take you live and in person, you know, just to walk in their world, you know, to see, you know, what kind of things that they've accumulated and that kind of stuff. But I want to go back to something that T-Hawk said. And do y'all think that keeping up with the Joneses is, I guess, in some ways considered to be striving for perfection?
No.
No?
No. No. Not in that respect. No. And before they had MTV Cribs and Basketball Wives and all those things, you know, people were looking at people in the neighborhood that were well-to-do. And a lot of times those people that were well-to-do were by illegal means. And people wanted to, you know, and it was like a recruitment thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I got this BMW, I got this Mercedes-Benz, and I've got Rolex, blah, 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 blah. This is how I got it. You know what I'm saying? So most of the average people that didn't have the means wanted to find out how to get these things, even if it was by ill-gotten gains. You know, so I think that the drug dealers had a lot to do with it way back, starting off with, you know, in our society. I could be wrong, though.
Yeah, good words, good words. Anybody else is keeping up with the Joneses in some ways considered to be striving for perfection on any level?
Man, I just jumped in the conversation, man. What's all about?
Oh, what's popping, BJ? You can go ahead and take it, man. You ready? We got you. We saved you some space. And the question on the table right now is keeping up with the Joneses in some ways considered to be striving for perfection?
Nah, that's not the way I perceive keeping up with the Joneses. And nowadays it's more like, you know, keeping up with what you see on TV.
Mm-hmm.
That not necessarily what's going on with the Joneses. The Joneses can be, you know, my cousin's household, wife, kids, he got a job, you know, everybody's happy. You see what I'm saying? I mean, it can be a struggle sometimes. It could be a stress and strain, but, hey, you made it through another week, made it through another month, made it through another year. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That can be, that was pretty much, you know, considered to be the Joneses back in the day. I heard the last part of what old boy just said, you know what I'm saying, as far as the drug deals or whatever, but I think it was more than that. I think it had to do with a lot with entertainment. You know, people who struck it rich and, you know, their families look back at them, or they look back at their families where they came from and didn't uplift them financially, or, you know, pretty much left them alone. That could be a big issue also. You know what I'm saying? It's like if I was to, you know, touch $1 million or touch a lottery, hit $175 million, you know, everybody in my family going to touch something.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's just how, the way I think. You know, it don't matter what the amount of money is, but everybody going to touch something. You know what I mean? So as far as keeping up with the Joneses, I don't think that's what it is now. I think it's just keeping up with what you see on TV and all these, you know, music videos and you know, Entertainment Weekly and all that stuff. Keeping up with them. If they buy something and say it's dope, it's fresh, or this is what it is, you know, then somebody who is, you know, middle class going to break their back to try to get that.
Good words, good words, good words. But let me ask you this, Can keeping up with the Joneses potentially end up ruining your relationship with the Joneses?
What do you mean?
I think it could potentially be that way because it could be perceived as actually being a little creepy, to be honest.
How so, brother?
Every time you purchase something or you're doing something, all of a sudden they're coming up and they're doing the exact same thing. You know, I like to perceive it more so as, yeah, you can look at it as things that people purchase and what they do and how they maybe style themselves or dress. But a lot of it, too, is what parents do with children. I mean, it's just like a competition where you're trying to
push it
against the other child. And if your child's in band camp, then my child's going to band camp. If your child is in the new Tiny Tim's Jungle Jump class, then my child's going to the Tiny Tim's Jungle Jump. And we're talking about that. And, oh, my child did such and such, was playing two instruments by the time they were eight. Well, my child's going to be playing three by the time they're eight. I mean, it's just out of control, and it just makes it something that it could potentially be perceived and taken as being a little creepy to the point that, yeah, after a while, you know, we ain't kicking it no more. I mean, we can't really hang out because, you know, we got the brand new, the Honda Odyssey. And now you pulled up in the Honda Odyssey. You told me last year you couldn't stand Hondas. Now you got one. I mean, what are we doing here? You know, my child got the new Door to Explore backpack and had a door party, and you're having a door party in the backpack. I mean, that's
right.
A little awkward.
Right. I'm going to tell you like this. I remember, my fiance at the time, and I was taking care of her son. And his third birthday party, man, I had the whole nine yards. I'm talking about from the grill outside, the DJ in my garage. I had the big old balloon cage thing, you know, the air thing or whatever the case may be in the backyard. Man, it was probably about 150 kids running around my damn backyard. Excuse my French. Running around my backyard, you know, all afternoon. I swear for the Lord, about 3 weeks later, a neighbor down the street did the same thing. he brought his kids, you know, that family, that household brought their kids over because it was a neighborhood thing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there it was. There it was. You know, 3 weeks later, he had the same thing, the same layout, and had the same DJ.
Wow.
You know what
yeah, I mean, let's talk about it. These kids' birthday parties, you know, these days. I mean, birthday parties are now like a Saturday event that extends for hours and costs hundreds and maybe even thousands of dollars. Whatever happened to just ice cream and cake with mom and dad and a couple of friends? I mean, what happened to that?
Yeah.
Listen, everything has to be dramatized because nobody's worried about, everybody's worried about what somebody else is going to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we live in a world by, you can critique my family, so I'm going to make sure that everything's so perfect that you can't talk about.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And doing that, you don't know how really you're messing up your own self-esteem because I'm like, it's yours anyway. They ain't got to show up. And if they talk about you, that means they love it. That means, you know, that's why I look at it is that if nobody's talking about you, then you should work. If somebody talk about you,
right? Now you got haters. That's what the saying is now. You got to have haters. If you got a lot of haters, that means you're doing something right, and that's not right all the time. You know what I'm saying? You got a lot of haters. That's what the thing is now. How many haters can I get today?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But see, it stems, you know, deeper than that. This was embedded in us a long time ago to try to outdo one another for massa.
Mm.
You understand what I'm saying? I mean, it's embedded in us to do that. So when you saw, you know, if this was slavery days, if we sit down in the field, we saw, you know, this black man, he's dressed to kill. We're jealous of this man because he has a little bit more pull to Massa than what you have. You understand what I'm saying? It's embedded in us because this is how the slave master broke us down. You know, if you look up in Google, the letter that he sent to all the slaves and plantation owners in Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and it spread it like wildfire. You don't kill your slaves because they were disobedient. You break them down. You make them competitive. You understand what I'm saying? One outdo the other. That's, you know, a dead slave is no profit to you. You understand? And this is what he wrote in his letter. So it's embedded in us to do this. And so it stands back a long, long time ago. You don't see white folk doing that. I mean, I ain't trying to pull the race card out like that, but you don't see white folk doing that. You don't see the white folk being competitive to one another. They might make, you know, comic films about it or whatever the case may be, neighbor against neighbor. But you don't see white folks saying, well, damn, he got a Benz, let me get one. How he get that? They mind their own business.
Yeah, actually, I disagree with that. You know, up with the Joneses, it's not tied, what you're saying, but it's not tied to one race over. No, I absolutely see all races, specifically Americans competing. You know, you could talk about, you know, Asians, you know, competing in academics or, you know, whatever. You know, it's not necessarily tied to one race or another, but, you know, with the generational aspect, shouldn't we be concerned with the next generation? What would they have to do in the future to keep up? And this is what I mean. For example, if they're riding in limos for a six-year-old's birthday party, I mean, what did they have to look forward to when they go to the prom?
I don't know, but when I grew up, I'm going to get me a truck like you.
Well, I mean, really, you know, if you got six-year-olds, you know, getting picked up at the limo, and then, you know, when they're 16 and it's prom time, I mean, what are you going to do, a helicopter? You know, what do they have to look forward to?
Well, you know what? I heard a great definition of status one time.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, buying things that you can't afford with money you don't have to impress people that you can't stand.
Very true.
That's interesting.
Hey, I think we all grew up in the era where we used to say, you got to get yours, I got to get mine.
See, I didn't grow up like that. I wasn't getting picked up in limos. I mean, I didn't even have a car to drive. I mean, my car was my Hush Puppies and my Schwinn. That was it. I'm not kidding you. You know, I mean, it was a foreign thing to me to turn 16 and get a car. I mean, in my life, I've never been given a car. You know, so that perplexed me that people did that, and I grew up, you know, and I raised my kids the same way. They knew they weren't getting nothing. They got to go out and make it.
Yeah, I actually got a car when I was 15, because I didn't even have a permit.
There you go. See, there you go. You had it like.
And that's real talk. You know, my brother, my brother's 8 years my senior, so he got a new car, and, you know, it was, you know, his car just was handed over to me, and that's what I drove to high school.
Wow.
And
I drove the bus, and I was hoping I wasn't on the short bus.
Yeah, actually, in high school, I had two cars in high school, and, you know, you're only driving for 2 years, but I had my brother's old car, and then my senior year, my parents got it. Well, my mom got a new car, brand new car, and I ended up driving that to school my senior year, and ultimately ended up taking it to college.
But you see, I think that's more the newer generation, Okay, see, I grew up in the 70s, and people weren't doing that. I mean, you had the odd person that could use mama's car every now and then, but, I mean, they didn't have a student's parking lot. Parking lots.
We had the student parking lot.
Yeah.
You know, I just grew up in a different era where people, I mean, they just didn't, at least where I grew up, they just didn't have that kind of money. You know, we had, there was times our family only had one car. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, a kid getting a car was, you know, I had a buddy that had access to his mother's car, and that was it. You know, and it wasn't like a, you know, like a, you know, like everybody having that kind of thing. It just wasn't that kind of party where I grew up. Now, it may have been some people, but like I said, in the 70s, you know, the people I was around, they weren't getting cars. Now, some of the white people were, but, I mean, we weren't hanging like that. And I'm not trying to play the race car. I'm just telling you,
yeah.
In the black community, you just weren't buying your kid a car.
Yeah, and is it our insecurities these days about being good enough? Is that causing us to, I guess, inadvertently raise unhappy children? And what I mean by that, you know, we're talking about cars and everything. I mean, do our children have little joy because we've robbed them of wanting something, working hard towards it, being patient, and feeling that euphoria they will get after finally earning it? You know, like in the case of a car, you know, in high school, I had two cars. I didn't have to work for it. I didn't pay insurance for it. I didn't have to put gas in it. You know, it didn't come from my resources. But I mean, dude, are we inadvertently raising, you know, just persistently unhappy children in that case by not letting them
be children? I think what we're doing is we're weakening our children.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
See, because
right.
I'm going to tell you what. See, I mean, nobody gave me nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I got, I had to earn. And you know what? If I lost it, I know how to get it again. But if you're always given something, you weaken, and then what you become, you start to look at things as what is owed to you.
That's right.
You see, you know, well, you know, I'm entitled. What are my entitlements? And then, you know, I really think, you know, when we do that, we weaken our children instead of, you know, and there's a lot of people that think, well, you know, I haven't spent the time. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I don't want my kids to have it as tough as I did. I want my kids to have it as tough as I did. I want my kids to be kicked in the face. Okay? I want life to beat them up. So they'll realize they got to be strong, because when you raise weak kids, you set them up for failure in life. They never understand how to set goals and how to strive and how to walk out there and go, doggone, look what I did.
That's right. And how would your kids feel, you know, about you if they grew up to find out that most of their extracurricular activities, their sports, the cars, the birthday parties, the extra tutoring classes or whatever the case may be, were more about you keeping up with the Joneses than it was about them and their interests and needs. You know, how would they feel about you if they come to find out that, you know, all of those things that you were buying for them and doing for them was more about your insecurities and not what they really needed?
I don't think they care.
I'm going to tell you what, I got a 20-year-old
really,
that would love
really
me to give her the keys to the car and say, hey, that's yours. Okay. You know, now I got a 27-year-old, on the other hand, that, you know, at this point she's like, no, I want to make my own way. Okay? But you can't tell me some 18-year-old kid wouldn't love the fact you hand them the Beamer.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, I would have loved that at 18. It wasn't going to happen. I mean, it wasn't a Beamer, it was a Chevy. But I'm just saying, you know, I would have loved to have, you know, I mean, you know, who wouldn't love somebody to give them something? That's crazy. You know, as you get older, you start to appreciate, you know, your parents, you know, what they leave in you is much more important than what they give to you.
Mm.
And to teach your children how to fish is much more important than giving them the fish.
Right.
You know, and, you know, one of the things, and I believe as men, and especially as Christian men, you know, we need to leave in our kids the values. You know, matter of fact, I just had a meeting last night with my daughter about goal setting and helping her, you know, to set goals and to teach her how to strive and how to succeed. Because most people have no clue what success means. Okay? People tie success to money.
Yep.
Okay? They tie success to a house or to a car. And you know, they tie success to a destination.
Yep.
And success is a journey. It's not a destination. It's what you become on the way to achieving that house. If you hit the lotto, you're not successful. Lotto, when you got a lot of money, you'll probably squander it, but you're not successful. Bill Gates' kids are not successful. They're rich, but they're not successful. And that's why this second generation of wealth is so screwed up. All of the advantages, they have all of the stuff and none of the responsibility.
Well, that's because a lot of our generation, X and Y, they were first timers going to college or medical school, first time leaving.
Hey, P-Town, you breaking up, brother?
Big phone. Oh, it was my phone.
Yeah, you're breaking up there, brother. A little bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah. It's better right now?
Yeah, stand still.
But in our generation, Generation X and Y, we're talking that everybody wanted better. You know, I didn't have these things when I was growing up, so I'm going to give them to my kids. And that's where these Xboxes and everybody things come in play. And we're going to give, you know, I'm going to give you a car at 16 so I can go. I don't have to come and do, you know, I can free up my responsibility and you can do whatever you want. I think that's where we came from, instead of people just working hard and continue to save and learn how to live. It was easier just to give it to them.
Yep.
And so now you're in the second and third generation, and that's all we do now. You know, you need new shoes. You know, you know when I was growing up, you had the school pair of shoes, and you had that play shoe.
And you had the church shoes.
And you had the church shoe. You had three pair of shoes for a whole year. You know.
And you
better
not mess with those church shoes.
Yeah, you know, they annoying the parents because they can't get a pair of Jordans.
That's right.
Man, parents, Jordan, my mother used to get me Skips. Skips are.
But that's just how it is, you know. We knew the blue light special.
That's right, okay. My mother used to get the cheap Charlie special. I'm talking about the bin of sneakers. You hear me?
And you used to be embarrassed being laughed at, but she like, hey, it makes you stronger.
I didn't want to be. I wanted a pair of Adidas or Pro Cads.
There you go. You ain't saying nothing because my mother never bought me a pair of anything. Why? Because I had an older brother who was 2 years older than me. So when he outgrew everything, it came to me.
That was yours.
Real talk. All the way up to I was probably about maybe 8, 9, 10 years old, I started getting, you know what I'm saying, the Sips and the McGregors and, you know. Yeah,
I don't even know what y'all are talking about. McGregors.
Yeah, McGregors.
If you was going to play football, you had to get your fan McGregors, man, from Kmart,
that's right.
man.
That's right.
$8.
That's
$8.
Right.
Those sneakers got me a paper route, and I got tired of laughing at me wearing the skips. And I went over to a place called Corvettes up in New York. They had a irregular bin. You could get that was the sneaker when I was going to Pro Keds. You could get Pro Keds for $19. Okay, and that was a lot of money because my mother used to spend $5.99 on the Corvette Special in the bin. And I mean, these things would melt when it got hot into the ground.
So let's bring it up to today, to August the 30th, 2011. Fellas, what are you teaching your children about money? What are you teaching your children about money? Simple question, but.
Glad you said that, because like I said last night, we had a meeting with our daughter who's 20 years old, and on goal setting and what she's trying to achieve and what she needs to do and how she needs to save it and how much she needs to get and backing up the goal and how much out of each paycheck she has to save to accomplish this goal and delayed gratification. Unfortunately, we don't live in a world of delayed gratification. We live in a world of Visa and MasterCard. You know, and it's kind of interesting because of, from my perspective, and, you know, she wants to do certain things. And I said, well, you know, you've got a plan and you've got to figure out a way. You've got to make more money to achieve the things you want to achieve. You've got to have a marketable skill, you know. And I just happened to have one of my camera lenses on the table. And I said, I wasn't buying these lenses at 20 years old.
Right.
No, I mean that just wasn't in the cards. You know, today is a different ball game. But you have got to develop a skill, and you've got to develop delayed gratification so you can achieve the things you want to achieve. If we don't teach these things to our kids, and you know, they're not teaching them in school. What they're teaching them in school is to get more education so you can go to school, get a job, get laid off, and go get more education.
That's right.
That's what they're teaching them, okay? You see, and school is about teaching people how to go out and get a job, get laid off, and get another, and figure you need more education, so at 35, 40, 45, you go back to school to get more education so you can get another job and hopefully hang on to that before they lay you off.
Anybody else? What are you teaching your children about money? And another wrinkle to that, are you teaching them different things based on whether they're a boy or a girl?
Nah, well, see, you know, my boy, I taught him how to count money, you know, with change. I would get him a change out of my pocket. And I taught him to put it in his big old jar that he got in his closet, which is about halfway full. Now, the only time that he is allowed to get anything out of there is if, A, ice cream man, and he has to ask. B, if you want to get, like, an ice cream sandwich or something like that at school, or extra, you know, grilled cheese sandwich, something like that, you know, some candy from a store, you know, he'll ask. You know what I'm saying? That's instilling discipline in him, so when he is responsible for his own cash, you know what I'm saying, which is coming up real, real soon when he gets that first job, you know what I'm saying, you know, he'll know not to pretty much have my grandfather say it, burn a hole in your pocket. You know, it's, you know, the money you got in your pocket is so hot, you know, you got to spend it pretty much. And that's not the way to go. You know what I'm saying? So slowly but surely he's getting there. You know what I'm saying? He gets the point of conserving money, because any amount of money that he gets, his birthday is coming up Monday, matter of fact. Any amount of money that he gets, he immediately puts it in his big old jar. He don't leave it in his pocket or want to spend it somewhere or whatever the case may be. He'll put it in his jar. He got a little stack going on. I ain't going for it.
Well, that's my was my issue. I got two daughters, and my 8-year-old, she gets an allowance, a weekly allowance, and she has to earn it, you know. And I think I started her too young. Started her in kindergarten, started giving her $1 a week. And, you know, she had to make her bed and had to play her piano and keep her room clean, keep her bathroom clean, you know, that sort of thing. But she went a lot of weeks, and was not getting paid, you know, and really could care less. And I was like, how come you don't want to get paid, you know? And then she finally realized, you know, what can happen. Like you say, she started, you know, getting her a little $1, and, you know, I would teach her, you know, just, I would pay her in dimes. And that way she could take a dime to church because 10% of a dollar. And, you know, that's just a small lesson that she can learn at that point. It was really a big lesson, but she can, you know, at her level, that's how I gave it to her. But, you know, over time, she just kept earning and earning and earning and earning. And, you know, we would go to the store, and she would never bring her money. You know, she would have piggy bank full of dimes, and I would cash them in for dollars, and, you know, she would want stuff at the store. I'm like, why don't you bring your money? So, you know, at kindergarten, you know, probably between kindergarten and first grade, she was a little bit too immature to know, you know, what, you know, how money works and everything. And fast forward to today, she's in the third grade, and she's gotten a raise. She gets $5 a week. You know, so I give her 4 ones and 4 quarters, and she gives 50 cents, you know, to church on Sunday. And, but literally, you know, she earns it. And it's not a week that goes by that she don't, you know, do her chores and get everything done. And she's just on top of it. And during the summer, you know, we took the summer off because she was out of school. And she's at home during the summer with, you know, with her mother, with my wife. And so we didn't really do the allowance thing. And, but towards the end of the middle of this month, she's like, Daddy, you know, when can we get, you know, back on the allowance thing? And I was like, you know, we'll get it back during, you know, when school starts. And she's, you know, just picked it right up. And, you know, one day she grabbed her money and we went to the store. And I, you know, I actually took her to the store to Five Below because she wanted these Beanie Babies or something. And she bought about like 8 of them things and spent all her money. And I was like, you know, you see, you earn. And, you know, you save a little and you give some to church. It was, you know, just all of those examples. And she, like I said before, when she was, you know, 5 or 6, she couldn't really interpret all of that. But now she's starting to put things together. And, you know, when she blew her wad at Five Below, you know, she's like, I'm out of money now. You know, I say, well, you got to wait until payday to get some more money. You know, payday's not till next Friday. But, you know, with that, are we consciously or subconsciously teaching our daughters to be independent women? Are we consciously or subconsciously teaching our daughters to be independent women when it comes to money and those sort of things?
I think we are.
Go ahead, T.O.
I mean, you know, I think, and that's real touchy. Because you want to teach them to be not dependent on anyone, not even you, a parent, you know, but especially a man. And that can come back and bite them later, because then they'll be too independent for marriage. Sometimes that happens too. But you definitely want them to be able to fend for themselves. And not wait for somebody to pay the bills, get the hair done, get the nails done, all that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah, good words. And like you say, it's hard to transition from that. You know, if you've been, if a woman has been doing that, all, you know, doing her own thing, and then a man steps into the picture, it's hard for her to, like you say, be dependent on the man when they've been used to doing their own thing. I mean, it's easier said than done. But good words, good words. Anybody else? Would you teach your children? Does it matter whether it's a boy or a girl?
And I think we should also, focus on teaching them how to stretch that dollar too, and not go and buy stuff just because, you know, you can. You know, what I would do for, because I have girls, and what I would do. At Christmas, a lot of times would buy them gift cards, you know, to the places, to the little places that they like to go shop. And then, you know, and they would get that for Christmas. So then they'd catch the after Christmas sales the next day or whenever, you know, I took them out to the stores. And then by that, they learn how to stretch that dollar. And instead of taking them to, like, Nordstrom's and Macy's and stuff like that to look for clothes, we would go to TJ Maxx, Marshall's. So then they knew they could get more for the same dollar.
Right.
You know, and then when you – and the same thing with shopping, with food and all that stuff. You got to teach them how to stretch that money so they'll have appreciation for sales.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They'll start clipping coupons. They won't go out and spend all their money on one thing. Just like you said, Five Below. Five Below is a good store.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Because a kid could go in there and get a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that same thing at the mall at one of those stands, not happening.
Yep.
You know, so just teach them how to stretch that dollar, and it'll take it. They'll take that a long way.
Yeah. And that's essentially, you know, thanks, T-Hall. That's a good word. That's essentially where I wanted to go next, because we done already got into the adult hour. But not yet. I don't want to go there with the adult hour yet. But back to the Joneses. Aren't the Joneses really living above their means? You know, T-Hawk was talking about stretching that dollar, you know, and catching a sale and, you know, being strategic, flipping coupons. But when you really look at the Joneses, aren't they really living above their means?
You would never know that, really. I mean, they might be living within that means. That might be their reality.
That's right.
What ends up happening for you is you're trying to keep up with what isn't necessarily your reality.
Right.
And that's where I think the term kind of gets coined from, because, one of the gentlemen on the call says, you know, he likes to buy lenses and does that stuff. That's his reality. That's not anything that's not him trying to keep up with anybody. That's his reality. Now, if someone else would have tried to go out there all of a sudden, and they've gone from a simple, you know, handheld digital camera, and now all of a sudden they're saying, yeah, well, where'd you get that lens? You know, I'm going to get one of those too, and blah, and that's not your thing. Then you were trying to keep up. So I don't think that it's necessarily one of these things where the Joneses may be living outside of their means. The Joneses may, their last name may be Jones. and they actually are the Joneses, you know, and your name ain't that. Your last name is Jenkins. So be a Jenkins. Be comfortable being a Jenkins.
There you go. But when you're in constant competition with the Joneses, won't they eventually start to notice?
Yep. I mean, like you said
earlier, P, I mean, you get a, you know, next thing you know, they got an Odyssey. You got an Odyssey, they got an Odyssey.
And that's when I think that they will potentially – eventually notice it. They will see it. I mean, again, just simple things. I'm just thinking about with kids, you know, because I'm not saying that there's anybody that I can see, but there's different points where you just start saying, when you go to the thing, like, wait a minute, she had that backpack, and now all of a sudden they got this backpack. Well, wait a minute, they were at this jungle gym flipping camp, and now all of a sudden this child, what are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can see it as a third party, you better believe that the people that are actually being mimicked can see it.
Because
at a certain point, it's not flattering. It's not you feel like, oh, you know, I'm kind of leading the group and I'm a trendsetter with our kids. No, it's creepy. You want my life.
Yeah, because instead of – go ahead.
It's a little dicey.
Yeah, because instead of being happy for them and their successes, you end up becoming jealous of them.
Exactly. I mean, you're overextending yourself in a lot of different ways. You're trying to – and, I mean, you see this a lot of times. You know, sometimes in family dynamics, one of my boys, you know, he works for Waste Management Services.
Mm-hmm.
But his, he's keeping up with his, his wife's sister, her husband is like a doctor.
Mm.
Trying to, at different points, talk about, yeah, you know, the family's going on this trip and they asking us to go and blah, blah, blah. He's like, yeah, you know, we could swing it, but if we swing it, then, you know, we're going to have to not do this, this, and this, you know, to go on this trip. And it's nothing to them because, you know, he's a doctor. He can do this, this, and this. And, you know, my wife is inadvertently giving me this pressure at different times about, you know, I needed this, this, and this. And in my mind, that's trying to keep up. Don't try to keep up. I think what's going to be even smarter is for you to be able to say or look your father-in-law or your mother-in-law or your wife in the eyes one day and be like, we didn't make this trip because I'm holding down my household and making decisions that are necessary for us within our financial circumstance. That's smart business. You don't go and overextend yourself just because all of a sudden, you know, that this is what the trend is or what's hot. And he and I, you know, have kind of talked about it, and sometimes he's made the decisions to go out there and put himself out on a limb. and other times he's held strong. But you just got to think about what works best for you. You know, when I think about the Joneses thing sometimes also, too, is like if you own a small business and all you do is chicken and fries and that's your bread and butter, and all of a sudden somebody moves in on the block and they're doing chicken nuggets, and you say, well, in order for us to hold the market down, I mean you too. No, you don't. You've been killing the game with chicken and fries. Stick with that. You don't need to go and add now. Yeah, you might dabble in it and maybe have a little quick little sample to see if your clientele and your base of loyal customers want nuggets. But obviously, if you've been killing the game with just chicken and fries, stick with it.
So
you don't need to go and do anything different. You don't need to overextend yourself because what you're looking at, you're looking at the short term. Like, oh, we're going to expand our menu. We're going to reach out to a new customer base, blah, blah, blah. The clientele base is probably big enough for you to do your chicken and fries and for them to do their nuggets and everybody still be happy.
So
I think this is Will.
Oh, go ahead, bro.
First time commenter, long time listener. But, I mean, I think it's more of a deeper meaning, at least for me. It's not really that people are trying to keep up with the Joneses. I look at it as people really living a simulation. Like, we see these things in the world. We see these advertisements. We see people that have X, Y, Z or whatever, and that people think that that's what they think life is or how to live life. And therefore, and thereby, you know, they keep buying into this simulation that this is what I'm expected to have if I'm trying to live this lifestyle opposed to just really trying to live their own life. I think that's really more of a much deeper thing than just, you know, I see someone with an Odyssey, and I want an Odyssey as well. And that's something that, admittedly, like a long time ago, I had struggled with as well, is that, you know, you sit up here and, you know, there's a certain expectation that's assumed if you're at a certain, you know, middle class or what have you, and you just have to fight that urge to live your own life and not the simulation itself.
That's a good point. And I think right now there's a commercial out that all of us have seen that really tries to get you to keep up. The
Which
iPhone.
The
that waiter that says is, if you don't have an iPhone, I guess you just don't have an iPhone.
I mean, and you're right. I mean,
every last one of those iPhone commercials where, oh, you can play this app, and, oh, you can flip through this and put it on your TV, and you can FaceTime with blah, blah, blah. And then at the end they say, but you know what? If you don't have an iPhone, I guess you just don't have an iPhone. You know what you're sitting there saying? Hey, I need to get an iPhone.
go ahead,
except for I think that you don't know. You really don't know what you don't have with an iPhone until you got one, as I say this on my iPhone.
That's good.
Can I chime in real quick here?
Go ahead, brother. Go ahead, brother.
And this has nothing to do necessarily with finances or, you know, having things, but a situation that I've experienced with keeping up with the Joneses two times is dealing with just lawn care, okay?
I feel you, brother.
I've seen people that take care of their lawns, you know, and on two different aspects. My dad, he was real good with his lawn. He had a green thumb. He would take care of his little lawn. He had a little small row home and take care of it real well. He had, like, tomatoes, and he had a garden out there. His neighbor on the other side of him would see him doing this and would be jealous of the fact that his lawn looked this way, and would come out, and every time my dad worked on his lawn, he would come out and work on his lawn. It got so bad to the point that they actually came to actually fighting.
Wow.
At the break, the fight up, cops were called and everything, restraining order and everything. So I don't think necessarily that it's something financial per se. It was more like the brother just said just now. I think it really has to do with, like, just personal happiness. You know what I mean? You get an idea of something that you want. Is jealousy involved? But you think this is what happiness is. This is what, not success as far as financially, but this is, he has a successful lawn. His lawn looks really nice. No weeds or nothing like that in there. He has a garden, and I want that. You know what I mean? And I was thinking back to, like, even with the Ten Commandments. you know, because it's not even with slavery. It goes further back than that, where they say, you know, thou shalt. It's like one of the Ten Commandments is like, you know, should not covet your neighbor's property or something like that.
Yeah.
I might be paraphrasing it or whatever,
yeah.
But it goes back really, really far,
yeah.
You know. So, I mean, it's not. I think it's, like I said, I think it's beyond just slavery and everything. But finances, it just goes to what we think, what we perceive happiness to be, where we're just like kind of built up. And if everybody around us has these things, we think that's what we're supposed to have. This is what, you know, we need to do. You know?
But who's more likely? Who's more likely to be influenced by what they need to have to fit in? Men
women.
Or women?
Women.
I got an even better answer. The person who doesn't know what they want. And
women.
It's men too. It's men too.
See, he just gave the example of the lawn. I mean,
I'm just going to say women, all of the above.
Hey, y'all going to do that? Come on.
I'm saying,
in my neighborhood.
Say what?
Everybody fights over the lawn in the neighborhood. You hear one lawnmower, everybody going outside, man.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's just how it is over here.
I mean, a person who doesn't know what they want out of life or not happy with their current situation, instead of just like the man said earlier, being instilled in it as a youngin, you know, being that's the parents' responsibility. Well, being that parents, a lot of parents don't do that, and a lot of kids, you know, come from single parent homes, and they're not really teaching their children. When they become adults, the first good thing that they see, you know, that feels good to them, that gratifies them, you know, that makes them feel good, regardless of what it is. That makes them feel good, so they tend to hang around it, regardless of what it is. It could be something material. It could be something of the flesh. Anything. You know what I'm saying? So it's more of a person that who is lost and really don't know what they want out of life. And that's a lot of kids today. They really don't know what to expect out of their lives because they haven't been guided in the right way. So their mind is going a million miles an hour in a million different directions. So the first good thing that comes to them, you know what I'm saying, that feels good to them, that they can sort of kind of control or whatever the case may be, they're going to stick by it. And that's not necessarily a good thing all the time.
But speaking of what feels good. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to tell a quick scenario where I came, what happened with me.
Go ahead.
It plays on what the gentleman just said.
Yeah.
My paradigm was a little different, and I chased success. And it wasn't even for the stuff. It was for the accolades of who I could tell you I was. And the missing part in me was always looking for approval.
Mm-hmm.
And continue to strive and chase and chase and chase, not because of the stuff I could have, because that never made me happy. It was the accolades that people said, oh, wow, you've got this or you've got that, and it made me...
Exactly.
It made me feel like somebody. It wasn't until my life crashed, and I didn't lose anything financially so much as you know, my whole real important part of lost my life and, you know, everything I'd worked for, my wife, my reputation and all that. And when in that point in my life, I found Christ. And when I found Christ, that's what filled me. Instead of trying to fill that empty spot with the stuff or the accolades or whatever it is, you know, which is a temporary thing. And for me, for 20 years of my adult life, I chased all those things, not even for the Kincaids hanging on the wall, but to be able to say, this is what I've achieved. Look at me.
But Andrew, isn't a little competition healthy?
Oh, I'm about as competitive as it gets. But, you know, that isn't with other people as, you know, I'm very competitive today. Whatever we do, you know, I'm going to be competitive. And I used to think my sisters would never want to play a game with me because they said, you always have to win. And I found out something about me. It wasn't so much that I love to win. I just hate to lose. Winning was okay, but losing sucked. Okay, whatever I do, I play to win, but I don't play to win at all cost. I mean, we can go out and hit golf balls, and I'm trying to, you know, I was out today on a ride, and if I'm riding my bike, I'm in a race. If you're in front of me, I'm trying to catch you. If you're behind me, I'm trying to make sure you don't catch me. And that's just what's in me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I'm not going to pop your tires to keep you from
throw something in the spokes.
Right.
But me, it was the missing part that was really in me that drove me. And it wasn't the stuff because, you know, after a while, the stuff doesn't give you anything. It's a short, you know, little something. And then it's got to be something else. But for me, there was a missing part. And that missing part was that Jesus-sized hole in my heart. And I tried to fill it with stuff and accomplishments and who I could be. And when that ran out, I had to do more of it. And when that ran out, I had to do more of it.
So you're essentially talking about a lack of peace?
That's exactly right. And it wasn't what my neighbors had. Okay, that never got me. It was that I could tell you who Andrew Diaz was. Look at what I've accomplished.
Mm-hmm. Good words. And speaking of competition,
God comes before the fall.
Yes, sir. And speaking of a little competition and going back to what my brother said about what's gratifying and what feels good, I want to ask y'all this. What about the Joneses who are always bragging about how much wild and crazy sex they're having? Have y'all ever met them?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
I had some neighbors like that, brother. They were, matter of fact, they were swingers.
They're not married.
They were swingers, yo. I'm dead shit. I mean, I'm going to tell you like this. You know, I'm not going to drag their name through the mud. Because the neighbors that I had, I'm talking about, they were the best neighbors in the freaking world. I bet they were. I ain't talking about all that. I'm just saying, as far as being neighborly, as far as watching my house when I'm gone, you know what I'm saying?
But how did you know they were swingers?
They told me. They had different folks, different couples coming over the crib. Yeah.
Wow.
You can hear Big Mama yelling. Yeah, you see what I'm saying? So okay.
Yeah.
They bragged about it, but I mean that's not tempting me to join in on the fun. I don't get down like that. You know what I'm saying? I really don't. You know, it's just something about, you know, two pair of sacks, you know, in the same room with another woman. I ain't down with that.
You ain't down with sword fighting?
No, sir.
On guard.
Really?
Your neighbor's black or white?
The what now?
Were your neighbors black or white?
Black.
Really?
I ain't
never heard no black folks doing
that. Man, look. I'm like I said, I keep in contact with them to this day, man. They have moved and I moved on too. Wait, I'm still cool with
them.
Just in case, huh?
Oh, that's good. And speaking of wild and crazy sex.
That's crazy.
If y'all remember, a few weeks ago, we talked about Viagra. Could you be trying to keep up with Mr. Jones by using Viagra if you knew that he was using Viagra?
No.
or, like my brother just said, could it be that you're just trying to keep it up for his wife, Mrs. Jones?
For his wife? Ooh.
What?
What?
The
wait a minute, you keeping it up to do something with his wife?
Yeah. That's a throwaway. I wrote that one in my sleep one night.
That baffled.
That's along the swinger line.
I guess, you know, if you banging Mrs. Jones and he's using, you got to be using too.
That's right. That's right. To keep up. Well, to keep it up.
If, oh, me and Mrs. Jones.
If he's using it right, you ain't banging Mrs. Jones.
That's good. That's good. But back to women, I say women are more competitive, but for women, has cosmetic surgery become another way to keep up?
Yes, Lord.
For example, if a woman's friend gets a facelift or lipo or boob job or whatever, is that woman more prone to do the same whether she needs the procedure or not?
Yes. Yes.
Or
yes,
she gets butt
yes,
jobs
yes,
now.
Yes.
It
is a
job.
Plague.
It's
it
a what?
It is a plague. It is an epidemic. It's a plague going on.
Getting right behind y'all.
And
you know what I'm saying?
At that pandemic,
booty shots.
Mm-mm-mm.
You know what I'm saying? Make the booty bigger now. When back in the day, back in the day, a big booty girl didn't get the respect like a slim girl got. They thought big booty girl was, you know what I'm saying, abnormal. Or what's the other word I'm looking for? Oh my goodness! An abomination. I'm serious. I'm serious. They thought it was Sarah. Look, Google Sarah Bartman, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Google Sarah Bartman, B A A R T M A N. Google her and listen to the story of Sarah Bartman, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. They thought that she was an abomination, that she had a big booty, and you know. Pretty much how them thick girls be looking on the video.
Right.
On the
right.
video. You see what I'm saying? Now it's the new news now. Now you got slim chicks getting butt shots now. You know what I'm saying? To make them to get more attention. And now then when they go to the club or go to a social outing and they're wearing that you know, that mini skirt with the 6-inch heels and another girl looks at it. She wants that same attention. So she wants to go the extra mile. And it's a push going on right now, I'm telling you. Everybody
identity.
Is getting it now.
The identity crisis.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Great words.
Yeah, good words, good words.
But what about the marriage, though, Rodney? I mean, you haven't asked that question yet. I know you got it in your...
I was just about to ask that. I mean, literally... I was just about to ask that. I mean, how is keeping up with the Joneses in general ruining marriages these days? How is it ruining marriages these days? Or is
I'll tell you my story.
Go ahead, T.O.
My first marriage, my ex-wife has, and she still has today, this best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I was an average guy, you know, just out of college, working, supporting the kid. You know, I have one child at that time. You know, well, maybe two. One was a baby. But anyway, just trying to make ends meet. And I would always hear about the things that her friend and husband acquired. You know, new house, business, jet ski, this, that, and the other. And frankly, I couldn't keep up with the way that they were making their money. But it was thrown in my face so much, it kind of, you know, put a lot of pressure on me. And looking back today, it shouldn't have put any pressure on me because I was definitely holding it down. But, you know, as a man, sometimes you think, I mean, we actually listen to our wives, you know, and if they're saying, well, you know, I want these things too, it can put some pressure on you because it did me, you know. I'm glad that I don't have to deal with it anymore now. But there's definitely, like I said, some pressure that can be applied to us when we're trying to at least keep up with their wants, even if it is, you know, that they're trying to keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was talking about with my boy, you know,
yeah.
the pressures that he's feeling. He said his wife, you know, is one of the main ones. Is always like, well, you know, my family's going on this, and my sister, and blah, 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 and da, da, da. And I'm just like, that's stupid, man. You need to do what you need to do for your house, and that's the bottom line. And if they perceive it a different way, I mean, it's just the way it is. It's two different lives. It's two different lifestyles. You do what you do. You need to do in order to be comfortable for your home. Because at the end of the day, you going back to your house, and they going back to their house. And the worst thing you want to do is have to, you know, say to somebody that you overextended yourself and now you need some help because you were just trying to keep up. That's just stupid.
Yeah. Wow. Generally speaking, I mean, do you think that most women would prefer to be taken care of and not have to work? You know, as the brother was saying, you know, they go on a vacation, they're doing this or that. But, you know, ideally, do you think that most women would prefer to be taken care of and not have to work and still be going on the trips and living a lavish lifestyle?
In my opinion, I think so.
Man, I prefer to be taken care of. Work.
Yeah, but how was it set up in the beginning? I think that's the key to all of that. What promises did you make in the beginning? I'll take care of you. You won't have to work. I got this.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm rolling. I'm a big baller. You know, all
right.
of these things, all these promises that, you know, that we make, and then comes time to marriage and the reality of it, and it's like, okay, honey, you're going to have to get a job. What you mean I got to get a job?
That's right.
I mean,
yeah. That's right.
Women actually today, in today's world, you know, really, really look at getting married and not working.
That's stupid.
Nah.
That's stupid.
I mean, in today's world, I mean, you know, you're paying half your money in taxes. It ain't the same world as it ain't.
Which is true.
Okay.
I mean, but Andrew, is there anything wrong with that? You know, if women want to be, if women prefer to be taken care of and not have to work,
wouldn't you prefer not to have?
Of course.
Okay. I mean, come on, yeah. I mean, you know, now that doesn't mean we wouldn't work. But
right.
I mean, wouldn't you want to be in a financial position that you didn't have to?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know,
the problem
with
that for women, particularly those with
the money, I'd be like, okay, that doesn't mean I wouldn't work. I'd like not to have to.
Go ahead, Pete.
But I said the problem with that, particularly for those of us that have daughters, is that that's just a bad setup because you got somebody that's providing for you and doing all that stuff, and you really have no leverage. I mean, a person that is,
right.
you bringing nothing to the table and somebody's just providing for you and they have all the financial responsibility, then at a certain point, they want to flip it about and be the only one making decisions or dictating what the pace and tone of something's going to be.
Right.
That's where it is. And I think some women ideally like that idea of, oh, you know, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. But, I mean, everybody is not, Tiger Woods and what was her name, Ellen or Edgelin or whatever her name was, where in the settlement you can get $100 million. That's not going to happen. What will probably happen is that in most situations, if you have nothing, most people have some common sense to set up something so that if it doesn't work out, you leave with nothing. I mean, so that's not a good setup because in my mind, I wouldn't want my daughter to grow up and she doesn't work and doesn't do anything to contribute to the financial well-being of the house. Because if this dude decides to be crazy and decides that he wants to do whatever or not have any understanding of what the financial doings are of the household, I mean, you could be totally screwed out of everything at the end. And then on top of it, this person has that leverage, like I said, to be able to make the decisions. And you really can't say anything. What you gonna say? You ain't doing nothing. You're not doing anything. What you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there would be like a partner in a business that doesn't really contribute anything, but they always want to say something. Well, you ain't
right.
doing nothing. What did you bring to the table? What degrees do you have? You're just here. You know, at any point, you know, again, you just think about a business. If you're the model, the face of the company, but you have no business sense. At any point, as you start to age and we need to approach or get to be able to market to a younger or youthful, more demographic, and you aging, I got the business sense. You know what, partner? You're done.
Yeah.
And you put yourself out there because, oh, I just want somebody to take care of me, and I just want to be the face of the family, and I'm just going to look good and do this and blah, blah, blah. That don't mean anything because you really aren't bringing anything concrete. That's shallow. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't go anywhere.
Well,
so I mean, I understand. I get it that most women in some fantasy world, even some guys, but at a certain point, I mean, even as a man, yeah, it would be great for me to marry some heiress that has all this money and I don't have to do anything but just basically blow her back out every day and just relax. Yeah.
Well, Peyton, let me ask you this. Let me flip what you just said. What if she was making your toes curl in the bedroom? I mean, would it be okay for her to bring little or no money into the household?
Again,
blowing your back out.
Let me tell you something, man. Let me tell you.
Tell us.
I'm not saying that sex is irrelevant inside of a marriage. That's completely the exact opposite. However, you know, it really don't mean nothing when it comes down to the finances and everything else that's put into a household. You understand what I'm saying? She can blow my back out all she wants, but she gonna get out there and get a 9 to 5. You understand what I'm saying? And she is not gonna sit around that house all day. That's just me. Now, if we got some kids and they're young, like, you know, 3 months, 4 months, 2-3 years old, you can sit at home and watch the kids. But other than that, you're going to get this 9 to 5. We're going to get this money.
What about training for Why Did I Get Married? 80-20.
I mean, 80-20 is nothing. You know what I'm saying?
You said 9 to 5, right?
This is 2011. This ain't 1950 where daddy go out hunting and bring the food and money home and mom gonna take care of the house. And this ain't the case no more. You know what I'm saying? You gotta be in a big, huge tax bracket for mama to sit at home while you go out hunting. You understand what I'm saying? That's just my opinion. I'm not saying that each and every one of your households, you run your household the way you would in your household. But with me, I make 6 figures on paper every year, but I don't see but maybe a quarter of that go in my pocket
after tax
at the end of the year, and that's a guaranteed fact.
Yeah, but B,
you know
speaking, yeah, good word. Speaking of your job, I mean, how do you feel about working a job in which you make a significant amount of money, but it requires you to be away from home and your family for significant amounts of time? I mean, would you rather take a lower paying job just to be home more often?
Yep.
No.
No.
No, because there's no with me. I'm career and goal oriented. So if I take a lesser job and there's no room to grow, then I'm stuck. I'm not growing nowhere. I'm not doing anything. I'm making the same amount of money, and that's it. You understand what I'm saying? Don't get me wrong. Yes, the sacrifice is I'm going to miss a lot of home time and quality time and playing house and Cowboys and Indians with the wifey. I understand that. I'm a goal-oriented person, man. You know, and I know that with what I'm doing right now will pay off in the long run. Not even in the long run, but it's going to pay off in the short term.
That's where you are in your life. Just stay in your life where you are. You know, if you're young,
any woman that I deal with, you know, any woman that I deal with, she would know before anything, any growth to our relationship, whether it be friendship or something more. She would know these things before, so she can't really say when on marriage. You know, if it gets all the way up to marriage, you know, on our wedding day. You know, she backed down from it. She's going to know this way before then, way before the first kiss. And that's just how dedicated I am to the cause. You know what I'm saying? She's going to know this. See, I learned from y'all, man. I'm serious.
Good words, man. And you were saying, Peyton, you were saying it depends on where you are in life.
Yeah, I just think it depends on where you are in life. I mean, if you freshly married, you don't have any kids, and there's really not anything that's got, you don't have a whole lot of debt and things like that, you might be real aggressive with your job. Heck, both of y'all might be really aggressive and not really be thinking about, you know, all those things. But then when you start to think about the family dynamics, you know, really start to save and do some other things, really focus on the quality of, you know, creating a life together and what that really entails within the marriage, that might change, you know, where now maybe
maybe it's not two people being aggressive. I mean, when you think about the industry of, like, medicine, you know, most doctors end up meeting other doctors. Well, that's a hard dynamic to be married to another doctor, and both of y'all got crazy schedules. How are you going to have a family do that stuff? So somebody has to, at some point, revamp what their priorities are in order to be there and be available and present for the family, for the kids, and all that stuff, because if both of them were to keep at that pace, that, I mean, that family, it may work, but it's going to be really hard to be able to have something where you have two people actively engaged in family dynamics. So I think it just all depends on where you are in life. But being able to recognize that, and as the gentleman just said, being able also to articulate up front where you are with who you are and what you're going to be, so that, again, nobody's caught off guard. Because, yeah, people change, expectations change, but you got to be able to always voice that in a manner that allows the success of the marriage and your relationship, first and foremost, with your spouse to be at its best. Because if your relationship with your spouse is not at its best, you can just kiss the family dynamics goodbye. Because it's teamwork makes the dream work, not, you know, one person. I mean, one person can do it, but would you really want to do it by yourself? Probably not.
I need me a down chick to hold it down, I'm trying to tell you.
So Peyton, would you say that all of this time spent at the office or, you know, on the road or working overtime to help maintain our extravagant lifestyles is slowly destroying the nuclear family?
Well, I think that the evolution of the definition of the nuclear family has evolved. So I don't know if it's destroying it or if it's really just continuing to stretch what our definition of it is. I mean, because it's completely changed. You know, the nuclear family way back at the beginning was, you know, woman at home, not doing anything but raising kids and cooking food and being domesticated and making sure that the home dynamics were in place. The man was running off and you had a white fence and a son and a daughter. Now that nuclear family has changed. I mean, now you got interracial families. Now you got, you know, definitely multi-generational homes where grandmom and maybe a sibling or somebody's living there, an auntie's living there too. So the nuclear family has changed with regards to the definition of it and the expectations. I think that what ends up happening is that you have to continue to discuss what that change looks like and how you embrace it, how you go about it, how you will factor into making good decisions that are well-rounded for individual as well as group interests. I mean, all of us in some degree, I don't have multiple kids, but a lot of you do. I mean, you got to do things that are individually inclined for one child and then something that's different for another. I mean, yeah, you're going to try to treat them fair, but fair doesn't mean equal, you know.
Right.
It doesn't mean equal. What one child needs is not what the other child needs. So you have to cater to those individual dynamics, whereas the nuclear family before, they might not care about that. You know, when you look at, like, some of these past films and stuff, I mean, if one kid got a bike, another kid got a bike. If one kid got a, you know, a BB gun, another kid got a BB gun. I mean, it's things like that, but that has changed. That has completely changed. And I think it's based on us to be able to recognize how to make that adjustment. That means that you got to go out there and maybe grind and do some things financially and other people are working. I mean, now most households are dual-income households. The concept of just being one income, that's like a foreign language to most people. I mean, even the wealthiest people, both people are working. I mean, that's something that, you know, whether, now I'm not saying that the jobs are paying the same amount of money, but people have interest and they're doing different things. I mean, one of my boys back home, his wife is a pharmacist, and he teaches, what does he teach? I think it's like, what is he, science at a middle school. I mean, so his wife is making cake. He is, you know, enjoying what he does, but that works for them. And they have a nuclear family. His mom lives with them, you know, and they are a white family. And you wouldn't necessarily sometimes see some of that stuff or think that that would be the case, but that's the way that it is. It's just something that is always evolving, but you have to talk about it, and you have to see how it's going to pan out. That's what I think.
I want to expand on something you said, though, about, you know, when she makes more money than you do. Do you think that's difficult, being in a relationship where the woman makes more than you do? I mean, I don't know if anybody's currently in that situation, but do y'all think that's difficult? Go ahead, bro.
Only if it's not no understanding.
Okay. See, the thing, like I said earlier, is about if whatever career that each individual chooses, is there room to grow. She might have had a big promotion, you know, that pretty much doubled his salary or close to it. You know what I'm saying? Nothing should change, but now you got a little bit more change coming. It's not coming from your work. It's coming from your wife's work. You know what I'm saying? Some men may take that as you know, not really disrespectful, but embarrassing that she makes more money than you now. But if there's an understanding inside that relationship that we're doing this together and we can't do one without the other, then it shouldn't be no problem. She can make $1 million a year. And I could make my measly, you know, $100,000 or whatever the case may be. If that's the case, so be it. You know what I'm saying? But if we don't have an understanding about it, then yeah, it's going to be a problem. It's going to eat at everybody involved.
Right. And again, that goes back to the whole thing of what I was saying about how the dynamics of the nuclear family has changed. Back in the day, a man would probably, be honest with you, put hands on his wife even thinking about wanting to get a job, let alone make more money than him.
Right.
But now, that ain't the case. I mean, somehow, so again, it's like, hey, we're working together as a team. If we're really trying to be about this marriage and this life as a family and being together and being partners in life and loving one another, it don't matter who is leading. It doesn't matter who makes more money. It's about us just being able to provide a loving and financially stable and God-fearing household that our children and our family are able to do grow up in. That's it. It doesn't matter.
That's it.
Oh, but again, that's the evolution of that nuclear family that wouldn't have been there back in the 40s and 30s, 20s. I'm creeping on up to 50s and 60s and maybe even a tad bit into the 70s.
Fellas, we also got to remember that in that nuclear family back in the day, there wasn't a lot of technology, there wasn't a lot of television, there wasn't a lot of franchise restaurants,
Yeah. There
wasn't a lot of, you know, amusement parks, vacation places, and times now. You work so you can take your family out on vacation. You know, I see kids in a car, everybody got an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got their own individual iPad in the back seat. Technology says it's computerized. Where back in the day, you know, you going on a road trip and your grandma gave you a book to read.
Yep. Everything's changing. Everything.
This thing costs money.
Yeah.
You know, houses used to span out. In the older days, you saw a lot of ramblers. Now you see houses building up. You get more houses if you build up. If you want the schools. I mean, they were talking about it all day on the schools this morning on, I think it was Russ Park. When we're talking about the separations of schools, the rich area versus the poor area. If you want a good education, you literally got to bus your kid almost to another city or county just so they can get the better education. Because you may not be able to live because everything is based off of income and society, I guess you can say. So life has changed where, you know, especially in the African-American community in the past, we stuck together. Just like somebody said earlier, if you got a beating, you know, the neighbor was able to give you a beating, everybody was family. Everybody, you know, you can go borrow a cup of sugar from your neighbor because your mama, you know, she knew she got paid at the end of the month, so she knew you was going to get that sugar back. Now you don't even know your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So we did it to ourselves. So we should not be, you know, this generation did it to ourselves because we wanted to be greedy and hungry. We wanted those things, like I said earlier, that our family didn't have growing up or you didn't see, you know, your grandma have growing up. So now you have an opportunity because you've been, like BJ said earlier, everything has been instilled in us as kids. Go to school, get a good education. get the right job. Work hard for everything that you want. Just like Andrew said, a lot of things you learn by getting beat up, by, you know, getting beat down, learning, you know, how to save money on your own.
That's right.
And speaking of getting beat down, good words, P-Town, and things evolving, as the brother was saying, how has the economic downturn affected your relationship, good or bad? Good or bad? How has the economic downturn affected your relationship, good or bad?
Simple. Because, I'm a single man, but I can speak from experience, you know what I'm saying? Simple. The fact that being that, you know, the economy is in a turmoil and it's going to be like that probably for the, you know, next couple of years, it's the fact of the status. Just like you said, keep it up with the Joneses. Where if you're laid off and you're accustomed to a lifestyle that you built for yourself, now you're not making the same income. You're working at a gas station right now compared to a corporate office. You know what I'm saying? Like one of my homeboys, he has a master's in political science and something else, and he works at Subway. You understand what I'm saying? It's that bad. It's worse. But if you are accustomed living a lifestyle as such, and you get laid off and you can't find a job, it's you know, the maturity should dictate your relationship, in my opinion. If that maturity isn't there, that common sense is not there to know that, okay, baby, we can't afford this no more, so we can't do this no more. You know what I'm saying? We're not making it, the income that's coming into the house is nowhere near how it was because I'm laid off now. And to the extent, women don't care about that. They still want to live that lifestyle. Most of them do.
I think that...
So now you're stuck in the rut.
Go ahead, T.O.
I think that in some strange, weird kind of way that the economy right now, the state that it's in, is actually better for marriage. And the reason why I say that is because now the money's funny, so this ain't working out. I'm just going to roll out and get my own spot. You know what I mean? Now you have to gel together even more to make ends meet, some people, or you have to catch up keep up with the times now. And I just think that it's a better opportunity for people to toughen up.
Right.
Toughen up, you know, dig back into those marriage vows, you know.
That's right.
It is what it is. When money is flowing, there's a lot of things you can do. You have more options. When money's not flowing, now you're limited. And that also means, you know, you may not be able to afford to get a divorce right now.
You're right.
Right.
You're right.
You see what I'm saying? So now you got to figure out a way. Well, you know what? We stuck for a minute, so let's just figure out how we can be stronger and get through this together, opposed to letting this financial crunch separate us and put us in a worse situation.
Yeah, I think it's cheaper to keep it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, from soulmates to roommates.
Yeah, I think
it's
keeper to keeper right now.
Yeah.
I think where the economy is right now, what it does is I think it's really allowing more individuals to refocus and evaluate working on the richness of their relationship and their marriage versus the material possessions and richness of the world.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, I mean, if you focus in on that and try to keep that pace right now, you're going to run out. I mean, it's going to catch up with you at some point, you know, because you may have that reserve, but you're burning through that reserve at a faster rate than you probably anticipated. So the short-term effects might not be there, but them long-term are going to be there.
Yeah.
So being able to really have that conversation, and I would say to answer your question, Rodney, about, you know, how it's impacted, it's been positive for, I say, my household, because really we have more conversations now about things. I mean, we had conversations before, but we really are having in-depth conversations where we are being, I'm not going to say we weren't strategic before because I wasn't going to let us not be strategic, but I think now what it's done is it's really allowed us to get on the same page with being and seeing the importance of being strategic and really mapping it out and saying, okay, you know, we really don't need to do this right here because it's really not going to miss. I mean, we talking about going out here and doing this for this amount of time, and we're going to see maybe it's going to be like 2 hours worth of good times, and, you know, when we could do this and we need this down here, it's actually going to last us 5 years. You know, that's more important than 2 hours worth of good times, you know, especially at this point with regards to how things are, and also just looking at the, you know, the dynamics of our family structure. You know, so that's one of the things that I think what it's doing right now for some individuals is because, again, it's making you refocus on the richness of your relationship and your marriage versus the worldly riches that were out there.
Yeah.
Good words.
And, you know, somebody was talking about keeping up with the Joneses and taking a vacation, flying somewhere, you know, and okay, you don't have the funds to do it. So you just sit home miserable. You know, I mean, you know, a couple of tanks of gas can probably get some nice places closer to home.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And, you know, you put, throw a little picnic basket in the car or a little overnight bag, drive 2-3 hours, and you're in a different location. That can be a nice little getaway for you and your wife.
That's right. Gas up the Odyssey.
Gas up the Odyssey. Yeah, 2 hours away, get a little bed and breakfast joint. Something like that, you know, and there you go. You got your quality time. You got your vacation. And I think that's what people are learning to do now. They learn to do within their means opposed to keeping up with everybody else that's still got the paper.
Yeah, and have y'all even noticed? Oh, go ahead, brother.
Well, yeah, see, I feel what y'all saying.
Uh-huh.
I really and truly do. But look at it compared to back in the day. Okay, back in the day, the household, regardless how the household was ran, it was still below, we still lived below our means as far as the money dictated. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, some made it out the hood or made it out the woods or whatever the case may be, but the perspective was still there as far as knowing the value of a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nowadays, even before the economy, you know, took a tumble, you know what I'm saying? A lot of households, in my opinion, don't understand the value of a dollar. They'll burn through their paychecks like it ain't nothing. And that could, and that very well could be a tipping point as far as the way the economy goes, because if the household runs out of money, that means that the businesses ain't getting money either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You
so
see what I'm saying?
On that note, B, and I got to land this plane, fellas. This is great chat. I only got a few more. We'll get you out of here, get you over to open mic. But how do we begin to stop this madness of keeping up with the Joneses? Like, what shall we do? On kind of along the lines on what you were stating, B. I mean, what advice would you give someone that's caught up in the whole keeping up with the Joneses? What kind of advice would you give them?
You got to communicate with your mate. You got to communicate with your mate, like, you know, I mean, not just actually talking to her or him, but show it on paper.
Yeah.
Because the root of it all is how much money you're intaking compared to how much money you're spending.
Yep.
That's the root of it all. And you know, a pastor one of the pastors at my church, you know, he said that the three things that pretty much destroys a marriage is friends, family, and finance. If your finances are not in order, you in trouble.
And that all goes back to communication. I think you
exactly.
You hit the nail on the head about, I mean, you have to become aware of what you're spending money and time on and then evaluating why.
Right.
And
right.
You know, the reality is you really hit the nail on the head with, and I've said this before, with women, you have to put it on paper.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to put it on paper. My wife told me last week, she said, you know, it's coming up to the end of the month, and I want a full financial report. I was like, okay. You know, because I got everything rolling. I got a few spreadsheets that I work on, but, you know, you know, she was like, I want everything, you know, documented. I want a full financial report at the first of the month. So I was like, all right. And, you know, with women, it really works better for them when they actually see, like BJ was saying, you know, you got your income and you got your expenses.
That's
and
right.
You might be in the black or you might be in the red, and then you got to plug a hole. But a lot of times we may know that just in our heads, but unless we put it down on paper, you know, the wife is like, I don't understand. You know, we make good money. You know, why don't we have any left over at the end of the month? Because we're spending too much.
Rodney, you know,
I remember my brother, my brother from another mother, when he was married, when he got married, his wife and himself were living in a condo, mm-hmm. renting, and they lived it for a year and a half, and it took him to put it on paper and see exactly how much they were spending on rent for her to realize, okay, we need a house. You understand what I'm saying? Not just, you know, not just either talking to her and saying, okay, baby, we spend too much money on rent and all this stuff that we actually don't need when we could be investing into a home, you know what I'm saying, that could very well be profitable for us in the future. You understand what I'm saying? And she was like, he forced her to look at the paper that he wrote down. And he wrote down all the expenses on the rent. And they were spending probably 14, 15 grand a year on rent by itself. And when she looked at it, it made her realize, okay, baby, you're right. Now, if he didn't write it down, then what?
You know, Rodney, I think you're talking about two different issues.
Okay.
Okay, keeping up with the Joneses is a heart problem. Okay, that goes back to motive. There's people that spend money and don't keep track and things like that, and that's not necessarily a keep up with the Joneses situation. That may just be poor financial management. A keeping up with the Joneses is somebody with a different motivation. Some with the motivation of this, the reason I'm getting this, and you can have plenty of money and be keeping up with the Joneses. So it's not your financial status; it's the motive of your of the reason that you're doing something that really comes down to that.
True that. Good words. Well, have y'all even noticed that the Joneses themselves have started saving and cutting back?
Yeah.
I mean, they may have been, you know, they may have had three Odysseys, you know, and now they done downgraded to one Odyssey. I mean,
I'm trying a smart car.
Yeah.
I don't know about the Joneses.
My
sneaker
brother,
he got a new ride.
But I mean, in this economy, don't we all need to find ways to cut back? And I'm sure we already have. You know, most of us, I mean, but don't we all need to find some ways to cut back, you know, not knowing what tomorrow brings at the job situation?
I mean, think about it. When gas went to over $3 a gallon, everybody started cutting back.
That's right.
Yep.
I don't need to go out five times. We go one time.
and you double up the trips. Be like, hit Walmart on the way home from work. You know, it ain't no special trip, just the Target or Walmart. You better hit that joint while you out that way.
But do you know why? Do everybody understand why people started cutting back? Because we were forced to cut back. Instead of doing it on your own to squeeze out a little bit more savings at the end of the month or the end of the quarter, however you do it, you know, we were comfortable with doing what we did before the economy bombed, before the fuel prices went up. So now we're forced do it. If we can't do it, then you're going to fall under the table. You know, you won't be able to put your head above water. Now people realize that. Now I wonder if next week come about and fuel for some reason goes back down to 99 cents, which ain't going to happen.
Right. Well, people still
do the same thing that they're doing when fuel is $3. See, dude, I paid Nashville, Tennessee. I was there a day and a half ago. No, two days ago. $810 on my truck at reefer. $810. I pay rent money every other day, mortgage money. You understand what I'm saying? Compared to, you know, when I first started trucking when it was 99 cents.
Wow.
And I only been trucking 8 years, and that's a big swing, dog.
See what I'm saying? So, you know, a lot of people went under because they never understood that concept. A lot of small truck companies went under because they didn't understand the concept. They had the money to spend, so they went on to, you know, dress their truck up and chrome mm-hmm. it out and put the boom boom in the side and back screens and this, that, and the third, whatever, whatever. Now the government or the oil companies and the government, you know, put a 300% swing on the price of fuel. Now, hey, there you go. You understand what I'm saying? Now, all that chrome and everything ain't worth nothing no more because you're not able to maintain it, can't wash it the way you want it to, because all your money is going to fuel. So that big old house you bought that you're paying $2,500 a month for, and you only making $2,500 a month after all your expenses.
That's a huge problem.
And there's no way of cutting back and saying if you can't, you're stuck with it.
Yeah. Them arms kill people, man.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you really, you know, I only got a few more questions, fellas. If you really wanted to start cutting back, do you think you would have your wife's support? And I mean, really, if you sat her down and put it all on paper, as we just stated, I mean, and you say, honey, we just really have to cut back. You know, we just really got to start cutting back. Do you think that you would have her support?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They know what time it is, man. They see the writing on the wall just like we do.
100%.
Yeah, that's a good word.
But Rodney, you asked a question about what would you, something about advice.
Yes.
I would give the same advice that I would give to a man that constantly cheats on his wife. And that would be is to learn to want what you got. A lot of times we keep up with other people's because we don't want what we have. We may have an automobile that is perfectly fine, but we don't want it. We want that new joint. We may have a house where we have rooms that we don't even go in because it's just houses, you know. You know, everybody's got that room. You don't go in it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Which tells me you got enough house. But maybe we want a bigger house because the Joneses got it. I think sometimes we have to just buckle down and say, you know, I got what I have, and I want what I got, and I don't want what the next man got.
That's strong right there. Good words.
See, at the end of the day, it's just stuff.
Just stuff.
And as our pastor says, after all of it's done, it goes back in the box.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, at the end of the day, and at the end of your life, after you fought and fought and fought and struggled and bought and all kind of stuff like that, at the end of the day, it goes back in the box.
Mm-hmm.
What do you really have? I mean, when you're laying on your deathbed, are you going to say, man, I should have got that 740 IL.
Oh, man, that's good.
Important things when it comes to the end of your life. It's not going to be, you know, the stuff, because the stuff doesn't matter. When you finally get things right and in order and you realize that, I mean, there's nothing wrong with stuff. And there's nothing wrong with having stuff. But when stuff has you, you got it out of line. And
good.
At the end of the day, it's just stuff.
Right.
And speaking of stuff, thank you, Brother Andrew. Speaking of stuff, final question, and this is a two-parter. So pay attention. Final question, two-part question. Here's the first part. Are you the Joneses? And what I mean by that, is that are there people in your social circle that try to keep up with you and your wife what you were buying? Are there people in your social circle that try to keep up with you what you and your wife are buying? It may not be.
I'm trying to keep up with the Turners.
But does anybody have anybody in their social circle that you kind of like, you know, as soon as I get the Odyssey, you get the Odyssey. I mean, or anything. You know what I mean? Is there anybody?
I used to be a Jones.
You know what I'm saying? You know, even though my last name Wells, but I used to be a Jones. You know what I'm saying? When I purchased my first truck,
mm-hmm.
and I was killing them, man. You know, I did the house that I was at. I was renting. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't ready to buy a house then, but I was making stupid money. I mean, let the truth be told. Now,
yeah.
I bought a 99 Suburban. You know, I get it from my grandfather, man. My grandfather never bought nothing brand new, nothing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he pretty much gave me a long lecture about new cars and stuff. That's just me.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a 99 Suburban. Cash.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Cash.
Wow. That's stupid money right there.
$9,500. I came in there, and the total price was, I knocked it down from 14 grand. And I paid
$9,500. Yeah.
MCAD, wedged it in his face. Look, I'm gone.
Anomaly.
You know what
yeah.
I'm saying? And it was like, my fiance at the time, start chit-chatting with the neighbors.
Chatting with the Jones.
About what I just did.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to tell them. They ain't none of that damn business. What I do for my money. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's other things, but yes, I was a Jones. Because when I bought that bourbon, my neighbor on the other side of my house bought a GMC. It's still a Suburban. You understand
mm.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I seen this. Da-da-da-da-da-da. All right, cool. That's what it do. You know what I'm saying? When I had my truck, another guy down the street and bought his truck and tried to get on with my company. My company wouldn't hire.
But B.
Yeah.
How did that make you feel? You know, you went and bought the Suburban with cash, making stupid money, and then you see old boy next door and bought a GMC, old boy up the street. I mean, how did that make you feel?
I could care less. Because one thing that's instead with me is none of my business what that man does. Until it comes across my yard. I mean, I seen it. You know what I mean? You know me and my girl, we discussed that about it. But it didn't make me no number mind. I didn't think he was jogging me. I just thought he just caught, you know, he saw it and he got it. Not because I got one, but, I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But when I look back at it now, yeah, I was a Jones, bro. Because
yeah.
we used to, man, go shopping. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, I let my girl look at fly when we step out. Shit, you know what I'm saying? Excuse my French. But, you know, I do. I let my girl look at fly. You know, pedicure, da-da-da-da. I mean, she got locks. So she had her locks did up, everything, whatever. So that's just me.
Well, here's
that's
the
just me.
Good words, B. Here's the last part of that question. And this will be the final question for the evening before we roll this thing over. Last part. Are you the Joneses? Are there people in your social circle that try to emulate you and your wife as it relates to your marriage? Is your marriage a model of a successful relationship that all the people around you are striving to achieve? Are you the Joneses in that respect?
Mm.
That's a tough one because, you know, when you think about material possessions and all the things that we've just talked about in a lot of aspects of this call, that's external so people can see it. The things that are going on with your marriage, you might not necessarily be sharing those positives and all those things that really make your marriage Jones-worthy. Because you're trying to just make sure that you do things that are pertinent to the intimacy surrounding your financial communication, intimate side of your marriage. Whereas everything that we talked about have been kind of like material possessions that you can see and definitively say, I want that. I've got to get one of those. Whereas stuck with your marriage, I don't know if people can necessarily see all the things that are going into it. I mean, other than maybe, oh, he's polite, he opens the door for, you know, she's compliant in some ways with blah, blah, blah. Compliant might not be the best word, but she's willing to definitely be, yeah, submissive wouldn't be a good word either, but long and be a partner. There's certain things that, with regards to your marriage, that you don't necessarily get a chance to. It doesn't come out there. It's not as flashy. I guess that's the way to say it. It's not as flashy as material possessions and camps and cars and houses and boats and golf clubs and memberships to country clubs. That's stuff that people can see. Whereas a marriage is something that you just work at. It's like the I give it to you. It's like the Cal Ripken of baseball. He never missed a day. He just casually grinded. He didn't have flashy numbers, but he did stuff that people should have been trying to mirror and mimic, but a lot of them weren't. They were swinging for home runs. They were swinging for the fences. They were going for the flashy stuff, the big lights, the big contracts. And all he does was quietly stand in the league, being consistent for many, 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 many years, not missing any games, being blue collar, doing the hard work, moving around in the batting order, and all that stuff. That's kind of how I perceive it and see it potentially as being kind of hard to have somebody say, yeah, I want to be like that marriage.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing it right, you don't have to be flashy. You're not even trying to. There isn't anything. You're really just focusing on doing what you need to do for your house, you know. And if people have questions, you know, a good way to. I just thought about this. Here's one way. I wouldn't say it's keeping up with the Joneses, but it's at least trying to continue to be godly and move forward. I'm on this call. I'm not saying I'm keeping up with the Joneses, but I'm definitely keeping up with the pulse of Christian men in order to continue to better myself. But I wouldn't know that if someone hadn't reached out to me and been patient with me and trying to get me on the call when I was trying to fight being on the call. I wouldn't have known that because it's not flashy. You know, it's not, hey, you know, I'm not even in the same region as most of you guys. So I would have never have seen it. I'm not at the same church that most of you go to and can see it and all of that and hear about it. I'm not in that. So for me, keeping up with it is really just trying to be in the same conversation and dialogue, and that's what this conversation is allowing me to do. But I don't know if you can just see it by looking at people. Like when I see, you know, certain individuals, like Rodney, I know you and Christy, and when I see y'all, I mean, I can say, yeah, but I don't know everything. So I don't know what I would strive to want to have and not have. You know what I'm saying? I don't know everything.
Rodney, can I comment on something?
Go ahead, brother.
2 years ago on our anniversary,
mm-hmm.
I keep up with the Joneses, and this isn't outside the family, but we got an anniversary card from our, at the time, 19-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she always gets these funny little cards and all that kind of thing. And at the end of the card, she wrote, I want to have a marriage like you guys have. And just like, you know, Peyton said, you know, from the outside, you can't see people's marriages. I mean, you see Glenn and I at church. You see us here or there. But you don't live here.
Yeah.
It's hard to see into a marriage. Now, a child, they're with you all the time. They know the real deal. And our daughter sees many different couples and many different marriages and many different situations. And I think that's really what you strive to be able to teach your children is to want to have a marriage like they see you demonstrating, and they see it's not some kind of phony this or that, you know. So that, for me, you know, that's the kind of Jones I want to be able to portray.
Yeah, good word.
Yeah, and I'll piggyback on that. Just like Peyton said, there's no way to gauge it. You know, because some people are great at hiding a failed marriage. Some people are hate at hiding when their marriage has issues. They know how to smile at the right time. They know how to look. They know how to hug at the right time, kiss at the right time. Now, do all these things at the right time, but in actuality, you know, all it is an act. And you know, we all know people like that, you know. So, I mean, so it's hard to gauge who's got it. I mean, I think Andrew hit it on the head. You really have to be with this couple all the time. And even that's not 100% because there's also a bedroom. Once you close the bedroom, nobody knows what's going on in there.
Right, right.
So what if, let me add another wrinkle to that question. you know, what if there were cameras, you know, in your house, you know, all throughout, you know, the different rooms and everything, and people, you know, almost like the Big Brother show, where every room they go in, you could see the interactions and everything. So in that respect, you know, as Andrew's example with the child that lives there, if there were cameras peering into your house, that, you know, we could turn your relationship on, you know, Sunday through Saturday, whatever time that you were on, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365. Is your relationship the model relationship? You know, is that something where you could, if you were to rewind the tape back yourself and look at your marriage, you know, on TV, on video, you know, play it back, would you say that, yeah, I mean, yeah, we pretty good, you know? Or if someone else was watching it, you know, would they say, yeah, they got a good marriage? You know, I'm not saying it's problem free or issue free or argument free. I'm not saying that. But would they say they were watching the tape back or watching it live or whatever the case may be, when you do what you do, you know, had a little cameras in there, would they, you know, like brother said, would they in turn send you a little email or a card or something, say, I want a marriage just like yours? Would they say that? Is your marriage the model relationship?
I just think I really believe that question is unrealistic. I mean I do. I mean even if there's cameras, okay, now you're on camera, so you're acting. That's what people do on cameras, they act.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that's just a natural thing. They act. Actors go on camera. You know what I'm saying? And I could look at Andrew's marriage and say, man, that's a great marriage. But how do I know that's going to work for me? How do I know that what they got set up is going to work for me in my house?
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? How do I know that, you know, that it is what it is? Just like you, Rodney, how do I know that what I see from you really is what it is? I can keep trying to keep up with y'all, the Joneses. Okay, well, they look like they got a good marriage. They look like they happy. They look like everything is going. The finances are well. The kids got all their teeth. The kids look good. You know, everything looks good. The cars, they got nice cars, house, everything. It looks good, but how do I know that y'all only having sex once a month? I'm just saying. I mean, you know, think about it. I mean, it, you don't know. So, like I said, I think we need to learn to want what we got and build on that and make that better and forget about the next family.
I think that's good words there, man.
Yeah.
Let me ask it one more way. Look at your social circle and the couples in your social circle. And now you only know you and your marriage. You know that intimately. Like you said, I don't know your marriage intimately, only you do. Would you say that if someone were to pick out, if they put y'all all in a room and they were, you know, selecting the best marital relationship, would they pick yours out of your social circle?
See, but that again comes down to,
I don't know what you're getting at,
just show you, man.
I'm trying to figure out what you are definitely trying to gnaw at right now.
Yeah, I'm getting closer because, like, you know the people in your social circle, and you know, you know, like you said, whether they got problems, you know, whether they faking it or whatever, or you know whether they look like they doing good. You know, I mean, it's some people in your social circle, you like, man, their marriage is screwed up. You know this. You know this for a fact, correct?
We've had a few of them on this call.
I'm going to speak to my circle.
Okay.
All the people that are in my circle,
yes.
Right, I respect their marriages. I envy. I'm not going to say envy in a way where I wish that, you know, I had the same one. But I will say that I respect their marriages and the way that they maintain their marriage, because I know that the heads are taking care of their business. They're making sure that they are on top of their game by hook or crook. And that's all that I'm asking for, is for me to be a better head, period. Not the wife. I can't dictate what she's going to do. It's on me and my circle. They all in my circle, honestly, most of my circle is right on his phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you said something really, really, really to the point, Tony. You said, you know, just because that marriage looks good doesn't mean that my marriage would work that way.
Exactly.
Because, you know, I mean, if you know, everybody's different, and your wife may react different than my wife, who may react different than Rodney's wife or P-Town's wife or whatever it is, and the way we handle things may not work. You know, we would find ourselves in a different situation.
Yeah.
Know what I mean? Because we got different, you know, we got different ways to do things, you know what I mean? You know, some of us don't want to get dirty, you know,
yeah,
and shy away from mud and stuff like that, and other of us, mud. Why are you laughing?
Go ahead, brother.
I'm
just
different.
Yeah.
One is better than the other, we're just different. And, you know, we would, you know, like when I met your wife, Rodney,
mm-hmm,
I thought your wife was this little prissy, you know, really, really super feminine woman that wouldn't break a nail.
Totally the opposite.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Now, you know, y'all didn't know Christine. No, that ain't Christine. And she's not this little quiet, diminutive, don't say anything kind of person. But that was my mind. That was what I thought. You know, so from the outside, that's what I picked up. I mean, all I saw was in church, waved to her, that was that. So we don't know what, you know, how somebody really is.
Yeah, you're right. And you know,
it's like, just like, you know, Tony said, we don't know what's going on behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
He could be whooping you.
Yeah.
And you know what, Andrew, you say that, but that was my first impression of her when I saw her.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I thought she was bougie, and I was like, who is this chick? She just... I mean,
you had an eye-opening experience, didn't you?
Absolutely, and quickly, very quickly. But, I mean, you're right. You know, we don't know. But, you know, I was just priding, and, you know, some of y'all, your social circle, they may view your marriage as a relationship, as the Joneses, and want to emulate it, and you may not even know it. You know, secretly they might be like, man, you know, my marriage is crumbling. But, you know, we got the cameras here, or, you know, you see us at the barbecue or at the church or whatever, and everything looks hunky-dory, but I really want what they have. You know what I mean? I mean, you don't know that somebody might be secretly thinking that y'all are the model relationship, and I think it goes back to what T-Hawk said, is that you have to look at the head.
Yeah, but I think that's more with women. I really think that's more with women, you know, comparing what they got to some other woman. If, you know, if my man was like this or that, I don't see a whole lot of dudes thinking like that.
Yeah, you know, because women are real quick to throw that line out, whether it's a joke or the truth. Must be nice.
Hey, and you know what? That's gaming, man.
Mm-hmm.
I'm serious, man. You're like, oh, man, you got a really nice husband. Especially up in the church. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm serious. Y'all think I'm joking. I'm serious.
And speaking of the church, I got one more before we shut this thing down for real. Really,
your fourth one more.
This is my fourth one more. But you said something that, you know, piqued my interest, Andrew, and I'm just going to ask this regarding the topic for the evening. Could what's put in the church offering plate be a way some people try to keep up with the Joneses?
How would you even know what that is? Isn't it a sealed envelope?
It's a sealed envelope,
right.
Yeah. Or it's a check.
How would you even know that?
Yeah.
Now, sometimes you get a plaque and say, you know, I donated this pew. You know, y'all know how it go. Or my favorite is we need somebody to give $1,000.
You
know, we don't do that at my church. But I've seen it done, you know. And then Andrew write his check, and then they like, man, Andrew just gave a grand. Honey, we got to grab it. You know?
Well, he just gave it then.
All right. I'd be like, Rodney went up there. Hey, sit down, sweetie. We ain't going up there. That pastor is sucking Rodney.
Yeah, we need 10 people to give
Rodney,
$1,000. Yeah,
don't miss your blessing.
Right.
We need 50 people to be Rodney.
The church, man, when
that happens in the church, you know it's going to be a rather large percentage that have that eyebrow raised, like,
Absolutely.
I'll wait till the $20 donation comes around. Because, man, I used to go to a church, they used to play that game.
Right. God told me to tell you.
Right.
$1,000. You hang around long enough, all right, God told me to tell you the $20 people. I'm not kidding. It was just
right.
I'm serious as a heart attack, man.
That's crazy.
Good words.
And Rodney,
go ahead.
I will say this.
Yes, sir.
And that when it comes to keeping up with the Joneses, I really hope that there aren't people. And I know this isn't true, but I really hope that there aren't people that are trying to model their marriage off other people's marriages.
That's right.
And you know it's going to be is a lot of marriages out there that's trying to get all Will and Jada, Jay-Z and Beyonce, you know what I'm saying?
And Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt.
Right. So, nah, brother. Man. Your marriage might be better than theirs.
Exactly.
Just because they got money.
Yeah.
Just because they worth millions and you see them on TV, everything, you think everything honky tonk. How you know it's not?
Yeah, everybody thought Mark Anthony and J Lo was it.
Yeah.
Right.
Look where they at now.
Because it all goes back to, you know, to who you're modeling after. And like T-Hawk said, yeah, don't model another relationship, you know, which is in the flesh. You know, we gotta model Jesus in his way.
Yeah, you got your J's confused. Joneses or Jesus?
Get the J right.
That's right. You know what? And you know, and then when you talk about the head, we may look at a guy and say, "Man, he has got." Because I've done this. I've looked at some married men and say, "Man, this dude's got it on. He's got it together. He's got the wife, the kids, the everything working. Blah 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 blah." You like, I want to be, you know, I want to be just like this. I want to run my house just like that. I want to be a husband just like this person. Woo woo woo. And then the wife may have issues with this same person.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? So if he ain't making a wife happy, but apparently he looks like everything, you know, the appearance is like he's got everything going on, but the wife ain't happy.
Yeah, he's out of touch. Problem.
Yeah, so how can you model yourself after that person?
Exactly. Yeah, that's crazy.
And guess what?
Look at that.
It, that person could be your father.
Anybody, your big brother.
Yep.
And then you find out, you'd be like, well, wait a minute. Mama ain't been happy in a long time. I thought, man, what is going on?
Wow. That's good.
You know, you hear some grapevine that wifey ain't happy. And you're dumbfounded, like, wait a minute, you got to be happy. It's got to be you. Because I know he got his stuff together.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous game, man. You gotta get what you got, take whatever it is that you bring into this thing and step it up and run with it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because truth be told, you do have a point, Rodney, that people do try to emulate marriages, but it's usually single females in their friends' marriages and see how just see that one part, the good part of the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And they start looking for men like their friend's husband.
Or they be looking at their friend's husband.
Waiting on the slip ups. So
that's right. She's a clean up woman. Y'all remember that song, The Clean Up Woman?
That's right. That's right.
That's too old for y'all to know.
No, I don't know.
Get your J's right, man. I ain't talking about the Jordans.
Good words. Well, fellas, we've reached that time. It's time for the conclusion. To fail to keep up with the Joneses is a failure to succeed in culture and in life. Now, maybe you don't say that out loud, but many of us sometimes think it if we're really being honest. Whether consciously or subconsciously, we too often think we need to match our neighbors in terms of toys, clothes, houses, and cars. but the effects of this type of thinking can be devastating and can lead to resentment and competition, which in turn ruins relationships. By focusing on real friendships that have qualities that help keep us grounded instead of possessions, you'll avoid ruining relationships. Yes, your friends will still love and accept you if you make your life about family values such as togetherness and sharing each other's pains. Instead of each other's concerns about who's got the latest and greatest smartphone, the newest car, the deck with the patio and the landscaping, or even the hottest new J's, as my man Peyton just said. If you find yourself trying to keep up with the Joneses, there are two basic things that you can do. Number one, stop comparing. Keeping up with the Joneses starts when you begin comparing what you have to what they have. Number two, be grateful for what you have. Instead of constantly wishing for more and trying to get more, be grateful for the things you already have, as my brother T-Hawk just said. Trying to keep up with the Joneses is never a good idea for one reason. It's a no-win situation. There will always, always be someone who has a bigger house, nicer car, cuter kids, a newer cell phone, or a better job. Trying to keep up with the Joneses is a never-ending quest that will continually leave you feeling empty and unfulfilled. Unfortunately, we look at our cars, houses, clothes, shoes, and gadgets as the reason why we aren't happy, instead of looking at them as gifts from God. We often allow our stuff to determine our happiness, while happiness should be determined by our relationship with Christ. Bottom line, don't even bother trying to keep up with the Joneses, because they broke anyway. That concludes our show for the evening, fellas. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Virtual Talk Show, brought to you by the Head of Household. We hope that you enjoyed the show. You can join us again next Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And next week's topic will be... to be determined.
Uh-uh.
Oh, what is... bring it to us, T-Hawk, quickly.
Why men hate marriage.
Why men hate marriage. I love it.
That's
why
aggressive.
Men hate marriage. Yeah, that is aggressive. For more information, please feel free to visit our website, www.householdstress.com. That website again, www.householdstress.com.
Hey, BJ.
Freedom over the country.
BJ. Yo. Hold on for 1 second. Don't hang up. Tell me a question.